You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Deloitte and Equifax continue to find themselves under scrutiny, but we should all resist the urge to chase ambulances. The SEC commissioner gets a grilling from Congress, and we can't help wonder if his spidey sense was tingling. Chances are your credentials aren't as secure as you'd like them to be, and Pyongyang is perched on a pile of coal. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, September 28, 2017. Deloitte continues to deal with the consequences of its recently disclosed breach. Many of those consequences are foreseeable piling on, as lawyers see, with some justification, regulatory gaps exposed by the incident, and as security researchers put the Big Four consultancy under the microscope and find all sorts of places where the company hasn't followed its own advice. Those include proxy login credentials out on Google+, they've all been taken down now, VPN credentials on GitHub, thousands of hosts exposed on the internet, as seen on Shodan searches, and so forth. Such results are practically inevitable for an organization as big as Deloitte, which may or may not be comforting. There's no further word on whether the breach is more damaging than Deloitte's initial minimalist characterization makes it out to be, but the company and similar organizations are sure to receive a great deal of scrutiny in the coming weeks. Turning to the other two high-profile breaches, the Equifax incident produces fresh waves of hand-wringing and learned helplessness over the use of Social Security account numbers as elements of identity management approaches. Those old enough to remember getting their first Social Security card may also remember the advice prominently printed on the card, not intended for purposes of identification. So it seems the New Dealers who set the Social Security system up under President Roosevelt may have seen something like this coming back in the 1930s, and we forgot their sound advice somewhere circa 1995. As Chesterton said in advice to reformers, if you come across a fence whose purpose you don't understand, wait until you know that purpose before you decide to tear the fence down. The biggest lesson emerging from Equifax is the importance of sound incident response preparation, especially with respect to disclosure and public communication. Federal News Radio offered some good advice on this. Quote, first, go public with breaches as soon as you can. Otherwise, it looks like you're covering up. Crappy cyber practices eventually come to light anyhow. You don't need a 5,000-a-day crisis management expert to tell you that. Second, realize that bad cybersecurity is as inimical to your job as crashing the mission. End quote. The Equifax mess has apparently also prompted what Palo Alto Networks deplores as ambulance chasing. Palo Alto CEO Mark McLaughlin explained to Jim Cramer on Mad Money that ambulance chasing means approaching a hacking victim and telling them that you've got the solution that would have kept them out of trouble if only they'd been smart enough to hire you. McLaughlin said, quote, what happens when you have major breaches like this? First thing is, we don't chase the ambulance. Nobody in companies appreciates that. So if your security company's dialing in the next day saying, first of all, I could definitely have stopped that for you, or something along those lines, you're going to be ignored. After the fire is out and you're thinking about the architectural design for the future, that's where we get to come into play. End quote. And that's probably advice worth considering for anyone in the security sector. For better or worse, passwords are still fairly ubiquitous when it comes to online credentials. How you choose them and how you store them can make all the difference in the world, especially with large databases of breached passwords readily available on the dark web. Trip9 oversees the Threat Intelligence Programs Division at Komodo, and he shares some of the credential compromise trends they've been seeing.
Everyone's familiar with a lot of the big breaches. LinkedIn, Dropbox, Adobe. However, what a lot of people aren't familiar with is how hackers are using, let's say, LinkedIn, for example, in 2017. We're seeing most of those hashes cracked since they were unsalted MD5 hashes, and it's very easy to uncover the plaintext passwords and also search for particular employees in an organization. So that third party we're seeing do a lot of damage. It's kind of a weird side door that hackers are using to get into organizations.
Take us through exactly how does that work?
Okay, so what a hacker would be able to easily get a hold of is 170 million records, LinkedIn records, I should say, on the torrent network. They would just query for particular domains, for example, company ABC. And then from that, they get the MD5 hash associated with that email address. And they would just take that over to a cracking site like hashkiller.co.uk, enter it in, and near 100% of the time, that hash will be cracked. And they'll find the actual plain text password for that employee. And then they can use that to brute force attack the organization. The way that most people deal with their passwords is they'll use the same phrase over and over again, maybe modify one or two characters, but it becomes very easy to reverse engineer and figure out what the present day password is.
One of the things that you study is password psychology. That's something that's interesting to me. How do people go about choosing their passwords, and what are some of the common mistakes they make?
Well, most people in my own research only use two or three variations of the same word over and over again for years. And what they'll do is when they're forced to change their password, they will just, if they have a numeric character in their password, they'll just go up one digit. And what that tells a hacker is, you know, for a third-party data breach that might have happened a year or two back, they know that they can just count down in digits to try to brute force into a particular application.
What are some of the other techniques that you see in common use?
Just switching to direct attacks, in contrast to third-party attacks, we're seeing a particular piece of malware called the Pony Exploit, which has been around for a few years. But we're seeing it become more and more advanced. It's very well engineered through botnet attacks. We're seeing it just wreak havoc on enterprise organizations. In fact, any U.S. enterprise organization over 1,000 employees, we usually find records, stolen records from Pony exploits, well, near 100% of the time. And that could be their customers, that could be their vendors, their partners, or their internal employees.
And so how do people find themselves infected with this?
We're seeing a lot of companies that we talk with, they had no idea that, you know, their director of HR, it was a phishing attack on them. But the malware itself, it's not like ransomware where, you know, you got the skull and crossbones that come up and demand money. These silently just go in and they take copies of actual credentials that are stored inside of the browser. And then they exfiltrate it. Sometimes the code has an auto-delete functionality built into it, so it leaves without a trace. Some of it is advanced enough to really evade more legacy endpoint detection.
So what is your advice for folks to protect themselves against these kinds of things?
First piece of advice would be not to store your passwords inside of Google Chrome, at least right now, or Internet Explorer or Firefox. Most browser-based password managers are very vulnerable. I would recommend LastPass or another password manager that has more security. And also these particular types of exploits, they don't know how to look into those files of those third-party password managers. There's no localized copies of the password stored onto the machine.
I see.
So be very careful about what passwords you store inside of a browser.
That's Trip 9 from Komodo. Turning to the Securities and Exchange Commission, the U.S. Senate has been hearing from, and more importantly, talking to, the commissioner this week. They've given him a grilling over the Edgar breach the SEC recently disclosed, but the senators have also been giving them some direction. The upper chamber is uneasy about the SEC's coming regulatory regime, the Consolidated Audit Trail National Market System, CAT-NMS. This system is designed to enable auditors to track all trading activity in the U.S. equity and options market. It will encompass the exchanges, other federal regulatory agencies, and industry bodies as well. and it appears to turn the financial sector into a panopticon for all of its participants, from Wall Street to Main Street. As Senator Mike Crapo, a Republican from Idaho, pointed out to the SEC commissioner, that's great power and great responsibility, so they'd better get it right. You don't have to be J. Jonah Jameson to think that the Edgar breach suggests the SEC won't do as well as Peter Parker. The breach of Sonic remains under investigation. Sonic, of course, is the chain of drive-ins headquartered in Oklahoma that has almost 3,600 locations in North America. It appears that the incident might be linked to the roughly 5 million pay cards that just turned up in the Joker's stash, a dark web market run by and for Carters. Fast food restaurants handle a lot of pay cards, which makes them attractive targets. Since last year, Chipotle, Wendy's, and Arby's have all been hit. North Korea's got a lot of coal it can't sell. Coal has been the DPRK's principal export for some time. We hear that they're sitting on $9.7 trillion worth of the stuff. That's trillion, with a T. Anyone who's got anything worth stealing online should look to their defenses. Pyongyang's especially interested in cryptocurrency wallets these days, and those nuclear and ballistic missile programs aren't going to pay for themselves.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Joining me once again is Dale Drew. He's the Chief Security Officer at Level 3 Communications. Dale, good to have you back. You wanted to talk today about some patterns that you have noticed and wondering if maybe we're in a lull before a storm. What do you want to share with us here?
Yeah, so my goal is not to carry the sign that says this is the end of the world. However, there was a study just released by CNN that says that 4% of surveyed Americans were worried about the eclipse. Mm. So I want to be careful in the language I choose, not to alarm anybody.
Right.
I think our concern is from a trend perspective. If you look at some of these massive global events, cybersecurity events that have occurred, about 5 years ago, we would have a massive security event, once every 4 to 5 years.
How would you define massive?
What I would say is something that impacts probably more than 3 to 4 countries at a time. Mm. And so from an internet service provider perspective, our sort of issues were when there was a major defect with a routing provider. You know, for companies, it was if there was a major defect that affected all versions of Windows or all versions of Unix, and they were all publicly exposed. You knew what every security organization was doing because everyone had to sort of group together to figure out how to block and tackle and then patch and prevent during those sort of times. And, you know, and we'd see those every 4 to 5 years. About 3 years ago, we saw a trend where that was happening roughly every 18 months. Bad guys were being more diligent in researching really, really old code. And the nation states do it because the nation states want to find exposures that have the most access across the internet infrastructure or the corporate infrastructure. Bad guys are learning from those techniques, and they're also researching really, really old internet code and really, really old operating system code to find a way to have as much accessible infrastructure as they possibly can, either for infrastructure capability. You know, I want to build a huge botnet, access to data. The more systems I have, the more PII and confidential information I can find, or for extortion. I'm going to, you know, we've seen a huge surge with WannaCry and Petya of spam ransomware. I'm going to encrypt 600,000 machines at once and then ask for $300. And if I get 10% of the people respond, that's better than a targeted attack against a few corporations. So our biggest fear is in the first half of 2017, we've already had two major global security events that have impacted, in one case, hundreds of thousands of victims, the other case, tens of thousands of victims. And so we're definitely seeing a shift in the professional bad guys employing more and more nation state techniques to be able to gain access to more infrastructure. This is something that from a, you know, what do you do perspective, this is something that really is going to rely on more vendors to make sure that they review their embedded code to look for those exposures the same way the bad guys are and hopefully find it faster. And for companies and corporations and network providers to spend more diligence in protecting their infrastructure, having a patch process so that when an exposure does come, you know how to block access to it, patch it, and prevent it, and to stay diligent on people who are trying to access that infrastructure. So when you can't prevent, you have to monitor. You know, so diligence, I think, is the key in the coming months and coming years.
All right. Dale Drew, thanks for joining us.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.
And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.